time for the lunch break on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. To be a part of the show, give us a call at 321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or tweet us at Lunch Break ESPN.
What's up? It's the Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7. Justin Ferguson, Painter Sharpless. Hello, Painter.
Mr. Justin.
Josh Vitale, the Montgomery Advertiser, the perfect Monday guest in studio with us, as he is every Monday. Hello, Josh.
What's up, Justin?
Hi, Painter. Try that again. Run that back.
Try that again, Josh, whoever you are.
Hello, Justin. Hi, Painter. That's what I said the first time, too, but I wanted to repeat myself.
Make sure it was clear.
Yes, we had to make sure it was clear.
People need to hear this.
That's on me.
Well, I don't think there's any other way to put it. We have to talk about
a very big Auburn and Alabama game.
A very big Auburn Alabama game. A huge win. A huge win for Auburn. A team that had a lot of disappointments this season, a lot of missed chances. You feel like they could have done a lot better with their opportunities. And yet, in the final game of the regular season, when it matters the most, they come through and put together a performance to get on the positive side. And I, of course, am talking about Auburn volleyball sweeping Alabama. You laughed too early. Dadgummit, you blew it. You freaking blew it.
I'm sorry. So fiercely, though.
Auburn volleyball, though, 3-0 sweep. They had not won an SEC match all season long.
They hadn't won more than a set. In
yeah, it had been a really, really rough year. And then they go out and sweep Alabama. Huge. On Saturday. That sets the tone, though, for the Iron Bowl. Auburn wins 48-45. Josh, you can chime in here if you disagree. Probably the craziest football game from beginning to end we have ever covered.
I swear that. Like, I know the kick six, everyone's going to talk. No. But that had lulls. That had moments. Yeah. Like, the second and fourth quarter of that game were insane. But, like, there were just times where it was like, this game, lead changes, turnovers, young quarterbacks.
It was like if 14 had a better ending.
It was,
yeah, really.
It was 10-10 with like 7 minutes left in the second quarter.
Yeah,
and then like everything hit the fan at once. There was the pick six. There was Alabama kept going down scoring on offense. There was
kick return.
I think in four plays it went pick six, kick return. One run and then a fumble.
Mm-hmm. There were 38.
Alabama scored like three plays after that.
I think it was 38 points scored total in the last 7 minutes of a half.
48 points in a quarter.
That's stupid.
That was more than three quarters of the Iron Bowls ever.
Yeah.
Combined in those games. It was insane. It was back and forth. I think there were seven lead changes in that game.
Mm-hmm.
And yet Auburn is the one coming out with the victory, 48-45. I think Derek Brown said it best after the game. He said, we weren't perfect. They definitely weren't. Nobody was perfect on that field except for probably Jaylen Waddle. But it was enough to win. They did enough. And for Auburn, they did enough in all three phases of the game. You know, that is ultimately the thing that stands out about us. Because we've talked about this a little bit. Great defense breaks down at some point. Mm-hmm. It is a theme. Last year, I know the Michigan-Ohio State game was one of them. Don Brown's defense in 2018, one of the best defenses ever in college football history statistically, and Ohio State just ripped through them. Okay? So, Auburn, best defense possibly since the 80s. We've been looking at this season. Alabama could not stop scoring at some point. They were walking down the field on Auburn, and something that no one else had done before. But two pick sixes, a stand to set up a missed field goal that we probably should have seen coming, but I still don't think anybody saw it coming because it was like a 30-yarder.
Yeah. Some Auburn players said they like had a feeling there. But Bo Nix was like, listen, it didn't matter either way. We were getting the ball back. I knew that. So, but
right.
Like, Seth Williams said, like, I think something crazy is going to happen. They're going to miss
Auburn special teams. There were mistakes in that game. But look, Anders Carlson, 4-for-4. All of them from 40 yards, more one from 50.
This is a kid who had missed six straight 40-plus yard field goals going into the game.
He sure did pick a fantastic job. And I guess it should be noted that the longest kick of the day didn't count. And then a few plays later,
yep.
Yeah.
He ended up making a shorter kick that I still think mentally, that's just tough. You've just made the kick. Now you've got to go back out there and do it again.
And that 54-yarder that he made, that thing would have been good from 60-plus.
Auburn's offense still has its flaws, and some of its flaws popped up in that game. But here's the thing. For the first time all season against a really good opponent outside of maybe Oregon, you probably have to go all the way back to the Oregon game. Yeah. When Auburn needed a response, they had it on offense. They had it. There were a few times where they punted the ball when it was a very bad opportunity to. They had a response almost every time Alabama tried to swing back. And that's significant because we had not seen that yet. And so, not perfect, but the offense did enough. Not perfect, definitely, by the defense. They did enough. They scored twice on their own.
Not after perfect, not scoring all season.
Not perfect from the special teams. What are you doing kicking a Jalen Waddle ever?
Yeah.
Still enough to win that game.
Kick the ball through the end zone.
And then the coaching in that game. Gus Malzahn, a lot of grief this season. Deserved. Yes. I would say a good portion of it deserved for what he needed for some of the decisions that have been made and the way these games had ended. He outcoached Nick Saban down the stretch of that game.
Yeah.
The
penalty to that still
brilliant.
Game. Yeah. And
brilliant.
You're only mad
because you didn't think of it first.
So my thing with Saban is because he definitely stopped short of saying it was illegal because he knew it wasn't.
It's not illegal.
I think, and then the other thing is, I think he is just upset that
he's going to try it on somebody at some point.
But like,
get it banned.
Listening to
either one, it's the two things he does.
But listening to him speaking after the game, he said he thought Auburn subbed and he didn't have time to. Auburn didn't sub. Auburn put 11 guys in the field. One of them happened to be the punter, lineup at wide receiver.
Well, they subbed at the beginning. Yeah. And what happened was is they had Waddle out there, and they're like, wait, they're still in an offensive formation. And so they try to shift that defense back on, but still have Waddle back there. And when the thing is when the official marks it ready for play, you can't have 12 on the field. It's like, oh, you just substituted.
Mm-hmm.
And he was still back there.
But the official was standing over the ball, letting Alabama substitute, and the punt returner never left the field.
He never left the field. And it would be interesting. I'd like to see a wide angle shot of that play because I want to see like how much.
It's tough because if you're an Alabama fan, I get it. It's tough to lose essentially on a technicality, but a perfectly reasonable and very clever move from Gus Malzahn. And they set that up earlier in the. I think it was brilliant. And you're right. The thing with Saban is he'll adapt. Instead of adapting or dying, though, he'll adapt or ban. Like, he'll figure it out, or he'll make sure that that can't happen in the future.
And just moments that, there's so many iron bowls defined by moments, right? The kick six, the kick, there's, the throwback to Lutz and Kirkin in 2010. There's so many great moments in Iron Bowl history where it comes down to a play. You could put about six in this one.
You could say the field goal before the half where Auburn somehow got 1 second on the clock and got the snap off. You could say
something that they practiced, by the way.
Yes.
Showing a little bit of ingenuity there.
Yeah. You could say it's the stand at the end and the missed field goal by Alabama.
Yep.
You could say
off
it's the
upright.
You could say it's the punt substitution penalty.
Two pick sixes. You could say
Sean Shivers knocking a dude's helmet off of his head while running into the end zone. You could point out 7 plays this game.
Yeah. And people should, I think, at least remember for a while Sal Cannella's catch because it was a wonderful catch.
I think those 3 plays in the
three
row.
3 in a row.
I think those are maybe Bo Nix's 3 best plays of the entire season in a row.
Yeah. And they were all exactly what they needed to do in that play. And that's what it's a game where, Alabama screwed up a lot. They made penalties. It was a very undisciplined team. They made their mistakes. And Auburn made their mistakes, too, and they still did enough to win. And that, when you're not the better team, and Auburn was not the better team heading into that game, it didn't matter who the quarterback was, you need to play more disciplined football, you need to catch some breaks, and you need to take full advantage of the opportunities that are provided to you. And Auburn did that, and that's why we're talking about them as the winners of the Iron Bowl and not, oh no, it's another 8-4 season. And that's huge. That's huge for a program. That's huge for what's going on in the future.
Let's go to the phones. James is on the line. We have a ton to discuss today on the heels of what I think you could argue was at least the most entertaining Iron Bowl we have yet to see. Let us know if you disagree. James is on the line, 321-1390. What's up?
Hey, man. I was thoroughly entertained.
Wow.
And I did have Auburn pick to win that game. When Tua went down, I had Auburn to pick that game because Mac Jones, those numbers he put up against that scrub team, I didn't even count that. But, I mean, he looked okay, although there was a couple of, there was one pass he threw. I didn't know that guy had his eyes closed. He threw it off his back foot, and the guy from Alabama received it and ran in for a touchdown. But I think Saban was being a sore loser in the end, and his comments that he said after the game. But to sit up here and say the referee didn't give you a chance, I looked at that thing at least three times at the end when they showed that. To sit up here and say you didn't have an opportunity. Dude, those guys were standing still. Nobody was trying to run off of the field. Mm-hmm. No coach on the sideline was signaling, hey, y'all get off the field. It was none of that going on the Alabama sideline. Bo Nix was smart enough. He counted those 12 guys. He made it known to the referee. And, dude, you just got caught with your pants down, man. I mean, give credit. Don't be a sore loser. Give credit where it's due. You just lost, man.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line.
And we can talk and we'll talk more because Auburn, I mean, you were right. You said it. You had to catch a couple breaks. They did that. Alabama, I was impressed by Mac Jones. I mean, there was a lot about his performance that I really liked, but obviously, like one of which he just made a bad throw. He aired it to Smoke Monday, and it was an easy touchdown. The other one a little bit more fluky, but yeah, Alabama missed some opportunities, and Auburn took advantage. I'm fascinated. Justin, are you at all like concerned? Not concerned, but what do you think about the differential in yards? Offensively was out-earned, but it didn't really matter.
Because they had two pick sixes right in that game. So that was the difference.
And Alabama held on to the ball for almost 36 minutes of that game.
Auburn's defense was getting worn down, and they made enough to get that stand there in the fourth quarter that was big. And, yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. It was a game where at the end Alabama just got beat. People can make excuses and you know, blame this and that and the officials and whatever. I'm with James. You just got beat. And I know it doesn't happen very often for Alabama and that fan base and that team, but you just gotta take it and move on.
Yeah, and another thing that I wanted to point out also was Alabama's the worst field goal kicking team in the country.
By far.
I mean, they showed the numbers on that. Man, I didn't even know that one. Man, they missed 100 more field goals than the worst teams than any top five. I mean, I'm sorry, than any of the power five teams in the conference across the country. Alabama has missed 100 more than them.
Yeah, it is insane to me, James. We appreciate your call. It is insane to me that Alabama has all this right, all this going for it. I know their regular kicker's been hurt this season. Reichert, the guy that they wanted, they got from Hoover, and that's tough. But like, it's Alabama. Like, you should be able to find a guy who would want to be a preferred walk on for you. That would probably go take a scholarship somewhere else.
Any kicker in the country should be like, they can't make field goals. I think I can. I'm going to go there.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I'm with you. It is crazy, and it just goes to show you can't really build a perfect team. Like, there's going to be a flaw everywhere, and Alabama's biggest flaw under Nick Saban has been special teams, and it got them.
You almost wonder what would happen if they had liked Daniel Carlson, whose grandparents were Alabama people, and he probably wanted to go there, and he didn't. He was very good, and Anders is pretty good. And Alabama hadn't either.
One of the things I was curious about was how you guys as writers would take on this. And I know you both have stories up at the Montgomery Advertiser and at the Athletic, but like there, you could talk, and I'm sure this doesn't even scratch the surface, the ups and downs, the momentum swings of the game, the ability of both teams to rebound, the offensive line play, Auburn's defense getting worn down, still making plays. Like, you just hit on special teams. Some of those catches in particular. I thought Auburn was fortunate when Seth Williams got into a bit of a scrum there. It, same thing with the offsetting penalty. I didn't know, did you guys think that it should have been an offsetting penalty? I like the call generally on Booby. I generally like it when there's players mixing it up, but I could have seen how the refs would have just thrown a flag on Booby in that instance and not on Alabama.
Yeah, I'm on Mars, basically, from the perspective of that
one
play.
Was far. I missed that one.
On the other side of that.
Point being, I just am curious, and you guys both have stories about what angles y'all tried to take on yours is broad.
Those are the games, like...
You love to cover them, but then you get into the press box, and you're like, oh, no, what do I do?
Because, like, we're not fans in the press box. We're just covering the game regardless of who wins or loses.
You're fans of the sport, and it's like the best the sport has to offer.
Yeah, but you're also, it's the third quarter. Like, I remember at halftime, after 7 game minutes of just absolute insanity, it's like, what do I do with this? How do I put all of what just happened into words with a theme and a headline? How do I describe this?
The last 6 minutes of the second quarter could have been a game within itself, I think. There was enough happening in that 6 minutes that you could have...
We've covered 11 games. We covered 11 games before that one this season where not that much happened. And there were more happened in those 7 minutes than happened in any other game this season.
Yeah, I guess the Florida, the wackiness and during that the Florida game would probably be just the only one that kind of rivaled it. And then the ending of Oregon.
Yeah.
But, I mean, yeah, it has been kind of cut and dry what you've seen this season from Auburn, and then that's what makes this one kind of special.
Also, a team that has not given up more than 24 points. So I thought there was a scenario in which I could see Alabama or Auburn beating Alabama if it was in the 30s. But if you had told me on Friday both teams are in the 40s, I'm going, yeah, that one probably favors the team with the elite offense.
If you had told me Friday that both teams would be in the 30s, I'd be like, no, this game's going to end. Both teams are in the 20s.
That game showed me, and I know there's been a lot of talk about it, that game showed me Alabama's got the best passing attack in America. I know Joe Burrow's going to win the Heisman, and I know LSU's put up great offense.
They just put in a backup, and
if Joe Burrow had, and now he's got outstanding receivers at LSU, but if Joe Burrow had Alabama's receivers,
Jalen,
game over.
Jalen Waddle is he's the fourth best wide receiver.
They've just been picking who has good games this season.
Yeah.
Like Devontae Smith had a game where he had four touchdowns or five. It was either four or five. He had a game where he did that. Jerry Judy's the best draft prospect out of them all.
Shout out to Noah Igbinoghene. Yeah.
And Judy was
most
held
quiet.
In check for the most. This is the thing. Well, Waddle. It's like I don't know what to do, man. Like if
you can't double all of them.
I guess they thought
it's a slot receiver.
Yeah,
he's a slot receiver, and like he's impossible to cover.
He had four catches for 96 yards and three touchdowns.
Could the thought process
plus the special teams touchdown
have been as simple defensively for Auburn's coaches as we refuse to let Jerry Judy be the one that beats us?
Like we're not going to get beat on the outside. If we keep it down the middle, at least we can find ways to try to tackle them. And the problem was that Waddle just takes away any of your angles.
Yeah.
For the most part.
Well, we know how athletic and fast Christian Tutt is.
Yeah.
And even he seemingly took bad angles. And I don't know as much as it is a bad angle as Waddle just makes it nearly impossible to keep up with them.
Right. And so you got Judy. Henry Ruggs didn't have a ton of production at that game. So it was just they did a good job of limiting most of it. But it's like one of them's going to get you.
Yeah.
Like if you
also, I would have thought Waddle, because when I went back and looked, when he had his four receptions for 98 yards, it felt like more to me.
Just because every catch he had
massive.
Was huge.
Yeah, yeah. So Ruggs had six receptions for 99, whereas Waddle had four for 98. Devontae Smith five for 80. And Najee Harris 4 for 26, Jerry Judy 5 for 26.
Like you will live with those numbers for each of those guys individually, but then you realize, oh wow, they're all together
on the same team,
all on the same team. But you know, once again, Auburn did enough down the stretch. Najee Harris, the first quarter was his. He was dominant in that first quarter and in that second quarter as well. Auburn did a better job of slowing him down in the second half. On the flip side, Auburn's own offense, they needed a game like this. This offensive line needed a game where they weren't perfect. They got beat from time to time. But look, Alabama had never had a game this season where they didn't sack anybody.
Mm-hmm.
It's the first time they had done that. So shout out to the protection. Bo Nix had to get out of danger a few times. But, you know, he did it. The protection held up for the most part. The other thing was that they ran the ball. And they ran the ball pretty effectively, over 4 yards a carry. And it's like, that's not outstanding numbers, but keep in mind, Bobby Whitlow ran for, what was it, what's the number?
114.
That's the most rushing yards an Auburn running back has had against Alabama since Trey Mason in the 13 Iron Bowl. Like, it has been that long since somebody has done that against Alabama. And I know this is not a great Alabama run defense compared to what they usually are. They're still pretty good. Bobby Whitlow was a man in that game.
Yeah.
And really, really... really, really helped Auburn win that one in a big way. He gave Nix some relief because it was going to have to be a lot on his shoulders.
Right, and to Nix's point, six rushes for 44 yards. Like, he had some, obviously,
could have walked backwards into the end zone on that first touchdown.
Auburn's 5.3 yards per carry, Saturday, were the most Alabama had given up all season.
Right.
And I asked players after the game what was different. And it wasn't, they didn't do anything different. They just executed.
They just executed.
For the
better.
First time against yes. a ranked team this year, they just, the plays were called and they did them right and everything worked. Didn't happen. It happened late against Oregon. Texas A&M, they got off to a good start, but I mean, it didn't happen against LSU, didn't happen against Florida, didn't happen against Ole Miss, didn't happen against Georgia. They finally did it against Alabama.
We'll go through these, I'm sure, throughout the show today, but at the Athletic, at the film room, I have a film room today on seven of the little decisions that, you know, it's not the punt fiasco at the end, it's not some of the other things, but it's some of the ones that may have been under the radar that helped Auburn win this game. One of the big ones to me in this one is that Gus Malzahn kept the faith in Bubi Whitlow, and he had plenty of reasons to just be like, you're done.
Yeah.
He fumbled in a key moment that gave Alabama the momentum, if you believe in that, and the lead. He dropped two passes, one late in the second quarter, one early in the third quarter. He had a personal foul penalty, the offsetting one that Painter alluded to earlier. So heading into the second drive of the third quarter for Auburn, he had a bad stretch. And what does he do immediately? First carry, he gets, boom, 17 yards, puts Auburn in field goal range. The next carry, he gets, boom, 30, or gets Auburn an advantage to let them win the field position battle a little bit better. Next time he gets the ball, 36 yards, puts Auburn in field goal range. And it ends up being a key point in the third quarter. They kept the faith in him. And it wasn't like, you know, and I think the thing with Whitlow is like it showed like why Whitlow is the guy. And DJ Williams is a really good running back. He's going to be a really good running back. DJ Williams is held in check. When he got in the game, he did not do a lot in there. Whitlow was the guy bouncing to the his ability to bounce to the outside, his ability to run through contact, be a little bit more shifty, really made a difference in this game.
Yeah.
And the fact that, you know, during the game, I saw several Auburn fans tweeting like, you got to take Bubi out of the game. You got to bench him. You know, this ain't working. And Auburn stuck with him, and it worked.
He's the only guy in a long time that you've seen that
get the leash,
that'll fumble, and Gus Malzahn will not go away from him. He does have that leash.
He knows the value. Mm-hmm. And we'll get to break here real quick, but I wanted to point out something going off of that. Brian Matthews at Rivals wrote this today in his column, and I thought it was a really good point from him. They're talking about like how people ask all the time, like how Gus does this. How does Gus Malzahn do this? How does he get a team to stay like this together throughout all the stuff that had happened to him this season? And, you know, B-Matt made the point that this team believes in him. Okay, but why? He's not necessarily the rah-rah. He's not Ed Orgeron. He's not the disciplinarian either. He's just like, it's Gus. Like, you know, he's got the football nerd look to him. How does it happen? And I think one of the reasons why, and B-Matt pointed out, is that his players know that he's got his back, that he's got their back.
Mm-hmm.
Anders Carlson, why rely on him in those as much as you did in that game after what he had done? Boom, four field goals. Bubi Whitlow, most times probably wouldn't have gotten played much in that game. Trust him; he ends up making a big difference in this game. Seth Williams had a rough stretch in that game, had the 15-yard penalty. They still go back to him. Sean Shivers, the guy who has been with DJ Williams' emergence, you haven't seen him a ton this season. They put him in on one of the biggest plays of the season. He ends up making a touchdown that people will remember for a long time. Gus believes in his players, and his players believe in him. And sometimes that's enough, you know, to overcome a lot.
That's why this team never quits.
It never does. It never does. There were plenty of chances this season to fold it up. There were plenty of chances that game to be like, we're done. The defense isn't getting it done in this game. This is it. But they kept fighting and they kept winning, and that's why they're winners, and that's why they're 9-3 instead of 8-4 today, and 9-3 with confidence, momentum, energy around the program, as opposed to 8-4. And man, who knows what we'd be talking about right now if they're 8-4?
It's crazy. It's one game. It's one win, but it means so much.
It means so much.
The Abbey Award-winning Lunch Break.
Welcome back to Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7. Justin Ferguson, Painter Sharpless, Gene Chizik joining the show in a few minutes here in studio. I had to talk with him for the next half hour or so about the Iron Bowl and what all went down from his perspective.
Sort of feels like nothing else happened over this weekend, but there were some other games in the league that had a big impact on the national race.
There are three openings now in the SEC. Yeah.
One's sort of a surprise.
Yeah, one is a surprise for sure. So we'll talk about all that with Mean Gene Chizik here in a few minutes. But for now, let's turn real quickly to what's on tonight.
Time now for What's On Tonight.
All right, pretty good Monday Night Football game tonight. ESPN 715, Vikings-Seahawks.
I wonder which Vikings team will show up. Like the good one that can compete in the NFC or the one that's like mediocre and trailed the Broncos like 20-0 at halftime.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting to find out because the Seahawks, I mean, you know, Russ is going to be Russ.
I think the Seahawks, if they win tonight, can take the lead in the division too.
Yeah.
I think.
Big, yeah. Now that the Niners have lost fight, yeah. So it'll be a very big deal in that one. Should be a good one. Vikings-Seahawks tonight, 7:15 on ESPN. NBA TV's got a doubleheader in the National Basketball Association. Jazz-Sixers at 6, Bulls-Kings at 9. So interesting little mix. Warriors in Atlanta tonight. Both of those teams have the same record.
What a world we live in.
We did not. But here's the thing. Here's the thing. At this point in the year, would have thought the Hawks would have had a better record. Honestly.
Actually, yeah, too.
So, that's where we're at. College basketball night. ESPN2's got a couple of games up for you. Miami-Illinois at 6. Clemson-Minnesota at 8. CBS at 7. The Christmas movie of the night. Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Great film.
And the Dan Peck Memorial HBO pick of the evening. HBO Signature at 6. The favorite. No House Hunters International tonight. Painter.
Excellent. All right. Well, right now we've got Coach Gene Chizik joining us in studio, so we'll talk with him briefly before we get off to break. Coach, thanks for joining us, man. You've been busy, I would imagine. Saw you on television a lot this weekend. Your thoughts on everything that happened? If you could try to summarize that in a few minutes, I don't know how you would do that.
Yeah, you need way more than a few minutes. Just craziness. Seems like every Iron Bowl played at Jordan-Hare has a new twist, right? But just incredible game. I'll tell you, if you're a fan, everybody got their money's worth.
And then some.
Yeah, and then some. But, yeah, just an incredible night. If you're an Auburn fan, I mean, you're just in heaven. You know, if you're an Alabama fan, you're scratching your head going, what in the heck happened? But it was just one of those great heavyweight fights, man. It was very well coached, and just the players played hard. Everything you'd expect in an Iron Bowl.
And we've talked about this with you throughout the season, but one of the things about Gus Malzahn's team and this Auburn team is throughout all the disappointment of this season and all the ups and downs in that game, that team just does not fold. And that had to be the big difference, I thought, in that game, is that this is a team that was still swinging with Alabama as much as they could, up and down, up and down. Even with the disappointing losses this season.
Yeah, I think that this game was kind of a microcosm of the year, right? You know, things didn't look good at times, and then, you know, they kept fighting and came back, and, you know, then things would go the other way. And you know, look, the bottom line is Auburn ended up with a 9-3 season and winning the Iron Bowl. So you can take all of the other things that people may or may not have liked. That's a heck of a year. That's a heck of a year, you know, considering the schedule. You know, the kids fought. They were well coached. They played hard. Defense was lights out all year. You know, obviously the two big defensive scores were huge in the game, really the game changer. And but this team kept fighting all year long, regardless of the circumstances. And your hat's got to be off to the staff and the players.
What did you think about Bo Nix's performance in the hour? I thought it was one of the, maybe not statistically one of the best performances of the season, but the way he handled the pressure and Alabama and the whole situation and some of the big time throws he made in that game.
Yeah, I think people are going to look at the season and they're going to look at his stats and be, you know, unimpressed.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't tell the story for a quarterback. A quarterback's story is really presented in how he handles enormous moments. And he put the team in a position to win the game, made some fantastic throws. The wideouts showed up big time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the wideouts absolutely showed up. Sal Canella, we can go on and on. Seth Williams.
Shedrick.
Yeah, I mean, they showed up. And Hastings had a big catch there at a critical time in the game. But Bo put the ball where he needed to put it. But the main thing is Bo protected the football.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't put the football in harm's way. He ran the ball effectively when he needed to. He extended plays with his feet, when he needed to. And in those huge moments in a game like this that you're a child and you grow up dreaming about playing in this game, you can easily go out there and choke with all the pressure that comes with it. Nobody out there listening to this whole radio show or people in general that listen to TV, they have no idea the pressure that's on these guys. They have no clue. Nobody has a clue unless you've walked it. And I thought what he did was fantastic. And, you know, in the offseason, people scour the numbers and go, wow, you know, it was a pretty mediocre, you know. I thought he had a fantastic year. I thought that, you know, in critical moments, go back to the Oregon game, first game of the year. You know, when he delivered, when the game was on the line. And, you know, and you can look at all the things and dissect it and slice and dice it. I thought he did great, and he'll get better and better as the years go on.
And for this game in particular, you mentioned the wide receiver stepping up, Bo stepping up. I thought the offensive line probably had its best game of the year in terms of protecting Bo, but also finding some ways to get guys like Bobby Whitlow room to run the ball in this one. And they needed that and for a group that had been up and down for the last couple of years.
Yeah, great point. You know, look, we know Auburn's offense – is effective when they can run the football. Mm-hmm. They ran for 180-something yards. Bobby Whitlow had over 100. But I really liked the game plan, and I liked the way Gus handled the offensive play calling, because he did tempo when he needed to do tempo. When his defense was out on the field a long time and he felt like he needed to give them a break, he backed off a little bit on the tempo. The offensive line definitely delivered in a big way with being able to run the ball and not letting Alabama make them one-dimensional. Mm-hmm. Because if they were having to pass protect because they were trying to come from behind by 17 points all game, that could have gotten ugly. So it was a great job of balancing the calls and being able to run the ball.
Coach Gene Chizik joining us this morning on the lunch break. We'll talk more about this Iron Bowl and all that happened this weekend on a jam-packed SEC football weekend. You're listening to the lunch break on ESPN 106.7.
This is the Abby Award-winning lunch break.
We are thrilled to be joined by Coach Gene Chizik this morning on the lunch break. Great time to have him in and his expertise after one of the craziest games, certainly one of the more entertaining games I've ever gotten to watch. Coach, one thing you mentioned right before we went to break was the tremendous amount of pressure on these players. You know, we forget sometimes, it's easy to forget that they are humans, and also that a lot of them are just kids. And you've been a part of that as a player, and then all the way up through the coaching ranks. If you would, kind of let me know what it's like. You know, really, Auburn had 2 weeks of thinking about this game. I know that they were preparing for Samford, but in the grand scheme of things, I have to imagine in many of these players' minds, they're thinking about how big of a game they've got coming up.
Yeah, well, think about it. Here's Mac Jones. He's been a backup all year, right? He's really, in essence, had 1 week to prepare, you know, with a game against Western Carolina to get ready for this enormous game where everything is riding on the line, right? Technically, there's more riding on the line for Alabama than Auburn, right? And then for Auburn, you've got this young man who's grown up, you know, dreaming of what it's like to play quarterback in this game. So the amount of pressure on these guys is overwhelming. And for me to even try to describe it would probably cheapen what it really is like for these guys. But I don't think people understand, you know, exactly what this is like. And, I mean, and let's be honest, you know, in the state of Alabama, you know, the governor, the head coach at Auburn and Alabama, and the quarterbacks at Auburn and Alabama are probably the five most recognized people in the state, right? Mm-hmm. And you're going to talk about all five of them, you know, ad nauseum. And so that's just a small picture of what the reality of the game is, right? And what the reality of those positions are. And the you know, I guess the pressure can be suffocating. And for the way both of these quarterbacks performed, I mean, you can't sit there and say Mac Jones didn't. I thought Mac Jones played outstanding.
Oh, yeah.
The amount of pressure, I mean, he had those lines, and he was just standing back there taking hits, clutch throws. Yeah.
And look, people are going to point to way through two pick sixes. Sure. Well, one pick six was kind of a
fluky,
kind of an anomaly type scenario.
Do you think
there
was just timing off? Did he just throw it behind him so it hit him in the back? What was the issue, you think, on that throw?
Yeah, well, there was pressure right in his face.
Exactly.
And he panicked, and he threw the ball and tried to get it out where, you know, what you would coach him to do when you have that much pressure, that quick in your face, throw it out of the end zone, and let's live for another down, because you can't turn it over down there. That was a 14-point swing for Alabama that you can't afford in games like this, right? Which was weird because the ball kind of sat on the back of, I think it was Najee Harris, mm-hmm. and you know, then McClain just kind of took it and went with it. But the other one was a total errant throw. He actually had Jerry Jeudy open, and he overthrew him, and that's when Smoke Monday was able to get the pick six. But nevertheless, you know, people point to those, but I thought he played outstanding with right. the pressure on him against the what I think. I think Auburn's defense is arguably the best in the country. I really do. Mm-hmm. Now, I haven't seen everybody else, but from what I've seen with the way the linebackers came on during the year, the way that the secondary played, obviously the front is just relentless. And, you know, Alabama had 500-and-something yards of offense and, what, mm-hmm. 45 points?
Yeah.
You know, that's hard to do against this defense. I mean, LSU couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. And they scored 23. So, just a great, great, great deal for both quarterbacks.
One of the big things that Auburn talked about throughout the before the game, obviously during the game and after the game, was the senior class and some of those key guys, especially on the defensive side, leaving a legacy and having a win like this, what this could mean for them. You know, whenever they come back to Auburn, whenever they look back at their, I mean, you've coached senior classes to, you know, wins like the 2010 Iron Bowl. I mean, what is that like as a coach and as a team to send your seniors out like that in a game like that?
Nothing sweeter than that. Nothing sweeter than that because, you know, you have such a great amount of respect for those guys that, you know, people sit there with a clicker on the couch and they say, wow, that's really cool, man, that those guys play college football. And then they hear, here's, you know, they're storming the field. It's all great. If you lived one day of what a college football player has to go through. And look, I got a son doing it right now.
Mm-hmm.
And he looked at me the other day after 14 weeks and 13 games and said, Dad, I had no idea. And I said, I know, son. I said, that's why there ain't many can do it now. This game ain't for everybody. You know, if you know what these...
Physically, mentally...
Everything. It's the physical part. It's the mental part. It's the day in, day out, daily grind. You know, the Navy SEALs have a saying that the only easy day was yesterday. And that's true with a college football player. It really is true. So you have such a profound amount of respect for these guys. You want to see them go out on a note like mm-hmm. this. Everything they've put into your program. And it's just, it's really neat to see it happen that way.
And one of the players I wanted to ask you about is Anders Carlson. This is a guy who struggled this season, and yet Auburn put and Gus and put his faith in him to go and get it done. Four field goals, perfect 4 for 4, all of them from 40 yards, one of them from 50 in a high-pressure situation. I mean,
Saturday night, we always, on SEC Now, when we recap the weekend, right. We always take our players of the week. And I mean, every week you can pick Joe Burrow. You can, sure. I mean, you can pick these guys that ran for a million or threw for a million, right? Well, I pick Carlson.
Yeah.
Because to me, in this game, do you know what 12 points is worth in the Iron Bowl? I mean,
a win.
Yeah, dadgum right. It really is. And he had two 43 yarders,
yep.
A 44 yarder, and a 52 yarder.
And he had struggled so much with those from distance
and
this year.
Nailed them. How about the momentum of the kick right before the half?
The half, yeah, it seemingly changed. And with Alabama getting the ball back?
That was a game changer.
Mm-hmm.
And, It was amazing, and it was you talk about clutch with everything on the line. He pulled it out.
Coach, how do you guys weather the storm? They were joking about it before you got here as writers. It was like almost more happened in the last 6 minutes of the first half than happens in a lot of normal games. So, like, I was thinking, you know, after Mac Jones threw that interception and it just was a bad throw and he'd been having a good game, I was like, I wonder if that will mess with him at all. But seemingly, whether it was Mac, whether it was an Alabama player making a mistake or someone on Auburn's team making a mistake, both coaching staffs were able to keep their players very level, very, I thought, sharp. No team ever thought, that's it, we can't come back.
Yeah, but let me say this. Yes, the coaches are always going to have that type of demeanor. At least they should, right? Especially in enormous games. Because the last thing you can do is let people see you sweat, right? I mean, mm-hmm. You can't look like you're panicking. The players are always looking at coaches when adversity sets in. What's his body language look like? What's his demeanor look like? You know, how's he handling himself? But I thought the key, because I look for this as a coach, I always watch the sideline and the other players when disaster strikes. And, man, every time Mac Jones, on both of those pick sixes, there were dudes coming up to him, tapping on the head, going, dude, we got you, man. I see it. You know, and I saw the same thing happening at Auburn right now with guys, you know, that were just, you know, they were encouraging each other. None of the players on either side panicked. And, I mean, that's why it was such a back and forth, right? It was like both of them had confidence that they were going to be able to win the game, and the game wasn't going to come down to one guy. And people are going to talk about the field goal kicker at Alabama missing the field goal, right? He missed the field goal. Yeah, they've had their kicking struggles over the years. I mean, that's well noted. It never comes down to one guy.
No.
There was you know, a zillion other plays in that game that attributed to, you know, the loss. So, you know, but I thought the players handled it well, too, in times of adversity.
Before we get to break, one more question I have to ask you. You have been around football for a very long time. You've seen a lot, I know. Have you ever seen a guy that size knock a dude's helmet off like that on the game-winning touchdown?
Unbelievable. Unbelievable,
I would
man.
Not have wanted to take – and McKinney's no joke.
No, yeah. He is no joke. I mean, he is no joke, no. Hey, that's big boy ball.
Yeah.
Big boy.
Sean ball. Wanted it. All right, we'll get to break. Coach Gene Chizik with us breaking down an exciting weekend of college football.
The Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7.
Welcome back to the Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7. Justin Ferguson, Painter Sharpless, Josh Vitale, Coach Gene Chizik in studio with us this final segment here of hour number one. Yeah, the Iron Bowl, I mean, so much crazy stuff happened. I did want to ask you, though, the SEC, there's now three openings now in the SEC. We're about to see a pretty decent amount of change, especially with Ole Miss and Arkansas and Missouri. How surprised were you about the Missouri and Ole Miss decision? I think both of them, not a whole lot of people saw them coming.
No, I think that people saw it as a warning year. You know, this year was the year where you call a guy in and say, hey, look, you know, we got to get this thing fixed, or, you know, next year we got to see some significant improvement the following year. That's kind of where I think everybody felt like it was with both Missouri and Ole Miss. And you got to remember, both of those guys played there.
Yeah.
That's their alma mater.
Yeah.
So that is another reason I think most people would have felt like they were going to get another year. It's a cold business. You know, you don't ever know what it's going to look like. You know, it's you know, the coaches. This is the time of year that stinks for the coaches and their families. People don't get that, but
right.
There's a lot of families here at Christmas time. They're going to be wondering what the heck, you know, where they're going to be living next year, and that's not a good thing. But you know, it's a profession that's, you know, results oriented. It's results driven. And you know what comes with the territory. And as a coach, you know, as they say, man, you can coach your whole life, and there's only two kinds of coaches, guys that have been fired and guys that are going to get fired. So, I mean, you know what I mean? In this
very
day
true.
And age, that's about as accurate as there is, as it is. So, but, you know, they'll rebound, but it's pretty surprising to me that those two scenarios happen.
Right, yeah, absolutely. We'll probably wrap up a little bit more from the Iron Bowl, but I did want to ask you about the SEC title game this weekend. And that LSU offense and that Georgia defense going head-to-head. I mean, playoff spot on the line if Georgia wins. I think LSU probably could still get in with the loss, but, man, what are your early thoughts looking ahead to that game? Because I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it is going to be a lot of fun. I'm going back today. We're doing a SEC film room breakdown on this game Wednesday. So I'm going to actually go home today and try to put some clips together and really look at some kind of intimate details of both sides of the ball. But it's going to be a big boy game. I mean, it's Georgia defensively, collectively, has played as good a team defense.
Oh yeah,
as I've seen. They don't have a Roquan Smith. You know, they don't have that no-brainer first rounder guy. They're just collectively, they got a lot of young guys and a lot of good players, and they've really produced. I mean, they've really held that team together when the offense has struggled, and that's going to be the key.
Yeah,
Georgia's going to have to score some points. And right now they're struggling offensively to find, you know, avenues to score. And that's going to have to change. DeAndre Swift is going into the game with a banged up shoulder to a degree. We've lived that movie. You know, you've lived that movie in the SEC 2 years ago at Auburn,
right. Mm-hmm.
With Kerryon Johnson going into that same game, and it wasn't the same deal. Now, I don't know that the severity is the same, but but George is going to have to find a way to manufacture some points to be able to score enough in this game to win it.
Going back to the Iron Bowl, we were talking about it just before you came in, just how important this game was for Auburn. It was obviously huge for both teams, but the fact that Auburn gets to hit bowl season in the off season off of that, 9-3 instead of the 8-4, and people are going to be talking about Gus and all that. I mean, from your perspective, how huge is that for the program moving forward to get a win like that, even if it doesn't result in a championship this season? The fact that you beat Alabama the way you did at the time that you did.
Well, as you guys know, I mean, that's everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's everything to the Auburn people, right? That game matters. And it gives you momentum. It gives you confidence. It gives you recruiting potential, you know, meaning that, you know, every year if there's, you know, 12, 13 great players in the state of Alabama that can play in the SEC, you know, you want as many of those to come your way, right? Well, you know, that helps in recruiting. So there's a lot of factors in that. But just for Gus in this coaching staff to have the potential to win 10 games this year with the schedule they just played is awesome. So hats off to those guys.
Coach, I'm curious to hear your take. Last week, some of the reporters, when they met with Gus midweek, asked him some kind of random questions. One of the things that came up was, out of all of the Iron Bowls you've been a participant in, which one was most memorable? And I don't know if Gus outright said it, because I think they're all pretty special, but it sounded like 2010 was certainly a fond one.
He wanted to talk about 2010 as much as he wanted to talk about 2013, which I thought was interesting, but, I mean, come on.
Your memories of that game, and kind of, you know, I guess the situation's flip-flop. In this case, Alabama's in this tough environment. They don't get down the way your team did. And what do you remember about that game, and kind of like what we talked about earlier on the sideline? I guess you guys managed to keep some sense of
hope. How did you keep all that together?
Yeah, and again, you know, I think that it does matter the how coaches respond to those scenarios. I mean, we got down 24-0, and it was looking bleak. I mean, it was not looking good. But you know, the good thing for us that particular year is that we had been down so many times and been able to fight our way back and come back and win. And if we just have one positive thing happen and get this thing a little bit closer, which happened, we scored a touchdown before the half and it was 24-7. And, you know, you just keep your composure, you keep fighting, and you get into the halftime. You know, we played the worst half of football, offensively and defensively, as we had all year long. And we were down 17. And not that that's good, but it beats being down 24 or 31, right? So, and we said we get the ball coming out, and we literally told them we're going to score on the first drive. It's going to be 27-14, and then it's on.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, we hit T-Zach on like the second or third play for a huge touchdown. It was 27-14, and then the whole demeanor of the sideline changed. I mean, you could just see everybody flip, and they were like, okay, this is it. We're rolling.
And we were talking about this during the break about Auburn, the final, the fake punt, the shifting and all that. We were talking about how you guys would run Cam in a similar spot, but in that game, converted a fourth down. What was that play call like to be like, all right, we're going to go out here, we're going to fake it, and then we're going to run it anyway?
Yeah, and again, that's probably some sort of kind of what Gus was doing in this particular case Saturday night. Now, I don't know exactly what the final outcome was supposed to be. Obviously, the one they got was pretty favorable.
I like that one.
Yeah, so But in 2010, we line up in the same scenario, and then if we got what we liked in terms of a matchup out there, we gave Cam the green light to throw the ball for the first down, which he did, and he converted that, and that was a huge point in that game. But Gus has done that his whole career, where he's had options with a guy to punt it, especially if you're really concerned about the returner, which if Waddle's your returner, you're concerned about him.
I don't want to kick it anywhere near him.
Exactly. So,
Coach Gene Chizik, thank you for joining us.
Absolutely.
As always, enjoyed it throughout the season. Looking forward, hopefully, to talking to you more in the future. And Yeah, enjoy breaking down that Georgia and LSU game.
Absolutely,
that's going to be a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Y'all have a great, great holiday, man.
Absolutely. Thank you, sir.
Appreciate it.
All right, we will be right back. Josh Vitale in studio with us as well. You're listening to Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7.
It's the Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7. To be a part of the show, 321-1390. Toll free, 1-888-382-7502. Or tweet us at Lunch Break ESPN.
Welcome back to Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7. Justin Ferguson, Painter Sharpless, Josh Vitale, the Montgomery Advertiser. Appreciate Coach Gene Chizik joining us, as he's done throughout football season.
I've been in here for Chizik.
Oh yeah,
and that was fantastic.
Uh huh.
It's fun to listen. We all know about football because we watch it and cover it. But Gene Chizik
knows
about football.
He knows.
That's just fun to listen to.
He knows what it's like to be in those situations that Gus was in on Saturday. He knows what it's like to be in those situations that guys like Barry Odom and Matt Luker in this weekend.
He knows things that we cannot possibly.
We will
learn.
Never know.
We can't learn. We can.
we can never
learn
know them
because I will never be hired as a head coach of a college football team.
He also knows great chicken.
Yes,
which you should check out.
You actually should. It is very good
stuff over there by Moore's Mill. Yeah, absolutely, Louis.
And if Josh puts a stamp of approval on a restaurant, you know it's good because this man has got the highest standards of food. I know he's a very picky guy. He's a very picky guy, except for Subway.
It's weird. I have very high standards, but I also like only eat the same five things and don't like anything.
So that's the thing, though. If you consider something to be good, like you, it takes a lot to get that trust.
Yeah,
it takes a lot to get that trust. But yeah, Louis Chicken Fingers, they've got an app.
It's convenient.
Yeah, you got a holiday party or whatever coming up. There's a lot of stuff going on.
Let them do the work for you.
Don't slave away cooking. Get some chicken fingers.
Don't slave away like Painter does for holiday parties.
Thank you. Yeah.
You cook so much for that. Was too nice of you.
Thank you. How different is this season right now with the little numbers 9-3 versus 8-4?
Oh,
huge. My God. I don't think you
can. All right, let's revisit something real quick because you brought it up yesterday. It was a summer conversation we had on this show. Yeah. How much Auburn fans would take 9-3 with one of the wins coming against Georgia or Alabama? If you're going to be thrilled, satisfied, or disappointed. I don't think very many people said disappointed either way.
Before the season, I got mostly thrilled. Mm-hmm. It was close between thrilled and satisfied. Now it's way more satisfied, and I think
that's accurate.
I think that's right because I think that
how.
It's always how. Because you look at the Iron Bowl.
It could have been 10-2.
The Iron Bowl makes you satisfied, for sure.
Yep. Yep.
And I still think you can write off those Florida and LSU losses as, hey, freshman quarterback on the road wasn't working. I think the game that takes you from thrilled to
satisfied. Because you were lifeless for three quarters on offense.
Yes, and it's not like they didn't have opportunities before that. Bo Nix fumbles. We were stuffed on fourth and
missing
one.
Missing field goals.
If Auburn wins that game, one, we're still talking about Auburn in the playoff conversation right now. Probably not in the playoff that close, but like
they're a New Year's Six team.
For sure, and we're talking about as a maybe if things go haywire on Saturday and championship weekend, maybe Auburn slips in. We're talking about Georgia not being in there. We're talking about a very different landscape right now.
And I'm a guy who thinks that bowl games are mostly overrated when we talk about like what they mean.
Especially if you're talking below New Year's Six.
Yeah, if it's and even the New Year's Six, you can kind of you saw what Georgia did last year against Texas in the Sugar Bowl.
You saw what Auburn did in the Peach Bowl.
Right, exactly. So. But I do know that this team, though, is very motivated to get to 10 wins.
Mm-hmm.
I think matchup's going to play a very big part in this, in whatever bowl game they end up in, whatever Big Ten team they end up playing, because God knows they're going to be playing a Big Ten team. But 10 wins is going to be significant. And
it's only happened 3 or 8 times since 1990.
Like, if you can get that, that is a significant goal for you. You hit the future, and we were talking about it earlier. With Chizik, it's like Alabama is going to have a new starting quarterback. Sure, it's probably going to be Mac Jones.
Yeah,
Mac Jones is going to be good. He's going to still have Jalen Waddle, but Judy and Ruggs and Devontae Smith will be gone. They got a new offensive line.
Najee's gone too.
Najee will be
they're
gone.
Not running back still, but
they're going to be fine.
They're still going to be good,
but it's going to be a transition.
This is
a year where everything was coming back around Tua.
Yeah, and now you're not. I mean. Tua's not going to be back.
So. Georgia has so many question marks on offense, right?
And you're losing the biggest. You're losing Jake Fromm, your 3-year starting quarterback.
And DeAndre Swift.
Yeah.
You're probably losing DeAndre Swift. And Andrew Thomas. Your best offensive the best offensive linemen in the league. Probably, I mean, these are all probably. Yeah. I think some of these guys could come back.
Yeah.
LSU is losing Joe Burrow.
Still talented.
You know that for a fact.
Yeah, that will
probably
be
going to lose. I don't know how many they lose off that wide receiver group. They lose a few. They lose a few of those offensive linemen too.
Bo Nix is going to be maybe the second most experienced quarterback in the West behind Kellen Mond, just because he's been there longer.
Yeah,
I'd take Bo Nix over Kellen Mond.
Yeah, because Arkansas is going to have somebody.
It doesn't matter.
Who knows?
They got to figure out. John Reese Plumlee and
Garrett Schrader were both.
Yeah, did not play as much as Bo this year.
Right. And Mac Jones didn't either. So, like, it is going to be kind of crazy. And also the fact on that is, like, if Auburn gets their offensive line right, which, question mark. I don't think anybody knows for sure. I don't think anybody knows for sure, good or bad, what that's going to look like. But he'll have his running game back for the most part, except for Cam Martin.
Whitlow and Williams. And Tank Bigsby, if he signs.
Tank Bigsby comes in. Mark Andy Richards.
Running back group is going to
Sean Shivers is still a thing.
And that the entire wide receiver core, except for Kinnell and Hastings, probably.
Right. And you're bringing in four guys at the moment that are high 4-stars. Kobe Hudson tweeted earlier today that his recruitment is shutting down. He's not even going to think about going anywhere else at this point, which is huge for Auburn because he is a big-time player.
And Javarius Johnson and Jashaun Sheffield both missed most of the season.
Jashaun Sheffield got some good FaceTime, though,
on Saturday. He did. Great FaceTime. But you're talking about, I mean, the biggest question on offense is that offensive line, but you're talking about the quarterback
and the weapons. In a year where there's going to be so much resetting happening on offense in the SEC among big-time teams, and there always is, but that's something you can build around for the future, especially if you're Gus Malzahn and you're like, all right, he's back in the groove again. He had a good win to finish the season. If you get that offensive line right, and you're going to have to tweak. They're going to have to adjust. They're going to have to tweak some things.
Yes.
I think there's going to have to be some schematic changes in the future for Auburn's offense in order to best fit Bo Nix and what he's got around him on offense.
This is the off-season to do that because last year you didn't know Bo Nix is your quarterback. You had him. You had Joey. They were still figuring out what the offense is going to be 2 weeks before the season because they didn't have the starting quarterback yet. Now you know Bo Nix is the starting quarterback for the next 2 years. You have a whole offseason to say, we know what he did best last year. We know what he didn't do best last year. Let's put it on him.
And you mentioned it. You mentioned we didn't know Bo Nix was going to be quarterback. That reminds me, Joey Gatewood, Kentucky, looks like he's probably going to end up here. I think he visited again.
Did he visit again?
He's been posting stuff about Kentucky, which great for him. I think that's a great fit for him. I just wanted to say all that to bring up Lynn Bowden.
My goodness.
That is, in this day and age, when, like, being one-dimensional is basically a death sentence in football.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that Kentucky has made it the way they did, just being like, we're not going to throw the ball. We've got an insanely talented guy. They went full high school.
Yeah,
they went Booty Whitlow at LaFette. Like, put your best player and with a ball in his hands. It doesn't matter if he's not a polished passer. It doesn't matter if, you know, if he might try to do too much. He can't do too much. He can't do too much because he's Lynn Bowden.
Yeah. He can't. He
was so good.
He can't and won't be SEC Offensive Player of the Year. But if we're talking about SEC Player of the Year,
there's not a more valuable player, not in the SEC, in college football than that guy.
If he doesn't do that, what, Kentucky loses like 8 straight games?
Because even with Joe Burrow, I still think that another quarterback under Joe Brady with those wide receivers could put up numbers. Maybe not Burrow numbers, but good enough.
Same thing you're looking at with Alabama.
No one's doing what Lynn Bowden's doing.
Same thing in Alabama. I mean, Tua is a fantastic player, but Mac Jones came in and still put up great numbers against Auburn.
I just wanted to shout out Lynn Bowden.
Lynn Bowden.
Good gracious. Right. That was an incredible thing. I mean, he was already coming into the year as a like all-purpose player pick in the SEC.
But he's first team all.
He's gonna be all purpose again. I would think he's just. I've never seen anything.
I don't
like
think
it.
There's a player that fits the all purpose moniker better than him.
There's the Hornig Award that goes to the most versatile player in college football. It's got to be.
How do you give it to someone else?
Speaking of awards, for what it's worth, Athlon giving us Jacoby McClain their nod as National Defensive Player of the Week, and in a different sport.
He had an absolutely great weekend.
That pick six, obviously, he had a team-high 11 tackles, one for loss, and then
one for loss. Both of them were half tackles for loss. Both mm-hmm. of them on drives that ended up resulting in goal line or red zone stops for Auburn.
Austin Wiley, totally different sport, also named SEC Player of the Week for his performance in the Legends Classic.
Anders Carlson, SEC Special Teams Player of the Week.
No, and Derek Brown.
No.
Yeah, Jonathan, disappointing.
And,
right?
and Jonathan Greenard had...
He had 3.5 sacks.
I want to talk to... Well, next time we talk to Marlon, I want to ask him about it. Because Marlon ends up winning the race.
The race is over. I don't think that's what he does this postseason.
But the race would have been... Yeah, like the race is over, but he said he would have given it the race to Derek if Derek would have done it in the Iron Bowl and...
Derek almost did
probably
it.
Probably should have. Mm-hmm. Probably should have. Jonathan Greenard is an outside linebacker. It's a 3-4.
Great player,
yeah. Greenard is going to be real good. Real, real good. All right. We have someone on the line?
Yes, we do. In fact, we'll go to Brian now. 321-1390. Brian, thanks for holding. What's up?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Well, it's been a very lively and entertaining show. So that's good. How about you?
Well, you know, even with it being only 10 degrees here, I could find a complaint in the world, to be honest with you.
There you go. There you go. All right, where do we begin? Where do we begin from this?
I'll tell you a real quick story. I called it that the Zacoby McClain interception. We were watching the game with two Alabama fans at the alumni bar, and I told him, I said, how pissed off are you going to be if you get 3 first and goals and come away with 3 points, or better yet, an interception? Next play, pick 6. you couldn't have lifted his jaw with a freaking John Deere tractor. It was ridiculous. Oh, my God. I loved every second. But that's probably the most entertaining Iron Bowl I've ever seen.
It's one of the most entertaining games I've ever seen, period.
Yeah, probably the best Iron Bowl. Like, even with the kick 6 in the mix, the kick 6 was depressing for the first 2.5 quarters. Like, it was bad.
And it had just such a moment, you know. The exclamation point there at the end was unbelievable. But you're right, Brian. The lead changes, the turnovers, the defensive scores, backup quarterbacks, playoff spots seemingly hanging in the balance.
Sean Shivers.
Oh, my God, Sean Shivers. When that dude's helmet came off, I thought his head was still in it. Like, oh, my God. Like, that is the absolute definition of lowering a shoulder. And that's what DJ Williams does, which is so amazing, because now we've got two backs coming back along with Boogie Whitlow that can do that, and we don't even know what Tank Bigsby and the other guy can do. I mean,
Richards, yeah.
Our running backs are going to be ridiculous. I'm not worried about our running backs.
It's got to get offensive line.
Offensive lineman transfers coming in. You know, Bo Nix is going to be a ridiculous quarterback. Our wide receiver core is going to do nothing but get better. Defense is going to take a half a step back, if that. I mean, we're obviously not going to have two first-round draft picks in the front 7, or at least the front 3, but they're still going to be up there. Truesdale is going to be a beast.
It's very helpful, Brian, when you look at that Iron Bowl. And, yeah, Derek Brown played great. Marlon Davidson was outstanding as well. But it's very telling that sophomore linebacker, National Defensive Player of the Week, making the big pick 6, the other pick 6, and another key sack earlier in the game, coming from a sophomore safety in Smoke Monday. These two guys who aren't even starters making big plays. Big Cat Bryant getting the pressure that started the long pick 6 from Zacoby McClain. The moments where you just saw all play. The seniors played well in that game. There were big moments for them. But I was KJ Britt continuing to be a force down the middle. I like what you said there, Brian. It's going to take a step back, but it might just be a half step back because you no one's replacing 5 and no one's replacing 3 like Chizik just said in here, but you've got weapons that are gonna try to be the next closest things.
You know, one of the other greatest things I saw was that cornerback blitz that Smoke Monday had that got the sack on Mac Jones. That was number 2. The first one, there was a penalty on the play, but the way that he timed that cornerback blitz,
he had it
coming across, like there was no way they stopped him. And like I said, that was the second time they'd done that. They just had a penalty on the first one. I forget what it was.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just a testament to Kevin Steele and that class of players. I mean, we're going up. There ain't no ifs, ands, or buts about that one. We're gonna go up. The problem is we just got competition that's also on the rise in SEC West. So, I mean, same story every year, but we're going to be competitive whether we got Gus Malzahn or, you know, some random D2 coach that they think is an up-and-comer, which we're going to have Gus Malzahn, so let's be honest, that's going to happen for a while. I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
But anyway,
yeah.
I'll let you boys get to it.
Yeah, appreciate it, Brian. Try to stay as warm as possible up there in the frozen north. But, Yeah, it is really interesting to see, though, with the future of this program, getting the momentum, the recruiting bump that you could possibly get with it, the staff continuity, I think, that's going to come from this. You know, I think there might be some changes to Auburn staff this year.
You'll see a lot of it stay the same.
But a lot of it will stay the same. The continuity, what you're bringing back, the fact that you're bringing back some of those offensive players who played their best game of the season, you would imagine, against a quality opponent in an Iron Bowl like that, to win an Iron Bowl like that, right? The defense to have the season they had and the pieces coming back with that. And then you look at next season, and Josh, we talked about this on Friday night when we were on Feinbaum with Marcello. It was, you look at the schedule next season, it gets easier. It's a step down considering what you had at this season.
And you replace Oregon with North Carolina and Florida with Kentucky. That's easier.
And you do go to Georgia and Alabama.
And you have to finish with LSU, Alabama back to back,
but you get LSU at home.
Yeah.
You get LSU at home, which is always easier. You play closer with LSU at home.
They beat LSU at home in the last decade, so.
Yeah, for the most part. It's different, but like there's a lot swinging forward, and that's why this win was so big, because you lose that game, there's so much frustration. There's going to be frustration, and there's going to be doubts about Gus Malzahn moving forward
Didn't Mandel write it there? If you, once you're on the hot seat, you just live on the hot seat forever, basically, until
you never truly get off.
Unless you win a national championship.
Yeah, you have to be Dabo Swinney.
Yeah.
Because Dabo was on the hot seat, and then they ended up turning the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes building a dynasty to do that. It's going to be really, really hard to do that at Auburn. But, I mean, look, Auburn is 9-3 with the toughest schedule in America this season. And that is significant. You should have been 10-2. You could talk to me into being 11-1. You could also talk me into them being 8-4, 7-5.
Yeah,
it's Auburn football, and the fact that they split the middle with momentum moving forward, I think is one of the best. Like, sure, if you're going to be 9-3 with the fact that you beat Alabama. It's the end of the season, and now you're moving forward in this.
And we talked about this before the season. They had six games against unranked teams and six games against ranked teams preseason.
Mm-hmm.
They beat the six unranked teams they were supposed to beat, and they split with
all
the games.
All of us picked 9-3, by the way.
Yeah, I picked 9-3. I've been talking about it all
Take
year.
That, Christy Malzahn.
All right, we'll get to a break and keep talking about this next.
You're on the Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7.
Welcome back to Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7. Justin Ferguson, Painter Sharpless. Josh Vitale, the Montgomery Advertiser.
Does this one sound like the beginning of a
70s sitcom?
Yeah, like in New York City where they're getting coffee and it's, you know.
It's all the shots of them like walking down the steps. Like
life's just smiling. Way too good for someone living in New York City in the late 70s.
Life's too good for anybody to live in New York City.
Currently.
Yeah, forever. Auburn Iron Bowl. We're still talking about it. Of course, we'll be talking about it for a very, very long time. We'll be
Until
talking
the start
about it
next season.
We'll be talking about it this week. I'm very interested to see where Auburn ends up going in the bowl game tomorrow night. The playoff rankings.
Those are significant for the first time in a couple weeks. They're significant
because I could see the committee being like, "Aha! Actually, Alabama, you're behind Auburn," but I don't think they'll do it. I think you can get. Okay, they will do whatever maneuvering needs to take place in order for Alabama to get into New Year's Six Bowl.
That's the thing. I think there is a very legitimate argument that Auburn should be ranked ahead of Alabama. I don't know if the argument matters though. That's the problem.
Right.
George Schroeder tweeted it. Auburn or Alabama is 0-2 against top 25 teams. Auburn's 2-3. One of their wins being over Alabama.
Right.
The only thing that Alabama has over Auburn is one extra win and the name Alabama.
Right, because like you look at it, Alabama didn't play Georgia or Florida this season. There's not even like a common opponent.
Yeah.
There's a difference.
I don't know if you can do this, but it's like if you give Auburn Alabama's schedule, I feel pretty good about them having the same record.
If you had to play Tennessee this year instead of Florida.
Yeah.
And you get to play LSU at home. Maybe
and they played. What if they played Duke instead of Oregon? I mean, they would beat Oregon anyway, but. That's a much easier schedule. I think Alabama has three losses to the playoff run schedule.
Yeah, I think they probably still beat Florida.
They still beat Florida.
Yeah, they still beat Florida. They probably still beat Oregon.
I don't know about Georgia, especially if I don't know about Georgia.
Georgia, though.
If it happened at the same time of year, I mean, two is out by that point. Yeah. That's probably a bad argument.
No, it happened on the same day.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
This Alabama team, like, it's crazy. Like, it's still one of the 10 best teams in the country, but by their standards, it just feels not very
good. Real quick, no one's going to want to listen to this right now, but, like, this whole thing of, like, the dynasty is dead, there's cracks for me. Like, think about all the insane stuff that had to happen for Alabama to finally lose two games in a regular season.
Yeah.
Part of the reason why Alabama loses and the games are so – or when they lose and the games are so entertaining, it feels like it takes some irregular things happening. Not many teams – LSU kind of did that. There are not
Clemson.
Yeah, Clemson definitely did that.
Reared back and just beat the tar out of them.
Especially in that third quarter.
Alabama had no Tua, had – so many defensive players missing, and came to Jordan Hare and lost by 3 points in the wildest Iron Bowl
perhaps any of us
have ever seen.
I know we can debate that.
A butt interception
and had a chance to tie the game with 2 minutes left and missed a field goal.
Missed a 30-yard field goal. The other thing I want to tie up about that is like it's obvious when Alabama. Like, it's obvious that it doesn't happen to Alabama very often because of the way the reaction is to it. Okay. It's also obvious that it doesn't happen to Alabama because, man, those people do not understand how to take a loss.
No.
They have no practice doing it. They have gotten so used to not doing it that it just becomes just insane.
So I've seen three segments of the population that I've seen on Twitter. Some are saying that Auburn cheated. Because of the penalties against Alabama, even though Alabama is the most penalized team in the SEC.
There's a reason why the barn cheating meme exists.
Yes. So Auburn cheated.
Yep.
Then there's one that is, the game didn't matter because Tua didn't play, so you just write it off and go to next year. And
you're not going to the playoff.
Yeah, and the third one is fire Saban.
Yeah.
It's done.
My favorite.
Which is, I actually like that one. Just lean into it. Lean into it. Yeah. The reaction of just everybody getting mad, like the tweets about like fire everybody on the defense. Like I saw like take everybody's scholarship away on the defense because of how bad they were. Of course, you had the traditional death threats to the kicker who missed the field goals. That happens all the time.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically one of Alabama's top five exports
college,
at this point.
College football fandom is very healthy, is what we're trying to say.
And here's the other thing, and this is my plea to you Auburn fans. There's a section of the fan base who we're looking at, especially today when the fine came down. It's like, do we have to storm the field every time we beat Alabama? And I say this. Here's my thing. I get why you're like, oh, it might look mammoth.
You want to act like you've been there.
Act like you've been there before. That's the most common refrain.
Counterpoint. It makes them so mad. Keep doing it.
Yeah. Also, as you point.
Who cares? They're going to be upset and whine about the loss anyway.
Yeah.
Go ahead and give them every reason in the world to hate you.
And you know,
just go full on heel turn. Just storm the field.
And you know where that money
storm
goes?
Storm the court when Auburn basketball beats Alabama by 25 at Auburn Arena this year. Just storm the court then.
And you know where that money goes? It goes to the SEC postgraduate scholarship fund.
It's going to be a close game now.
It goes to a good cause. So it's not like Auburn's giving money to Birmingham.
It. Yeah. Lean into it. Lean into it.
Also,
those people don't like you anyway. make them mad.
As someone who, in a day, has made the serious mistake of trying to wade through the people on the field to get to the post game press conference,
I was smart this time.
Those people had a great time out there,
mm-hmm. Except for the guy who broke his ankle.
Yes, I did.
That was nasty.
I did see that person
was nasty.
Being tended to by the medical personnel.
By the way, if you know we. I don't want to get too far inside baseball here, but if you know the women who got stuck in the hedges, please convince them to talk to the Athletic, because we've got a lead on them, and I think we just need them to respond. And this is the story that Nicole Auerbach was born to write, and we just need some cooperation.
I'm concerned because
so if you know them. Convince them.
There's one
video that Rex Chapman tweeted.
If you can be the one to convince them to talk, yeah. I'll get you a subscription.
There's one video that Rex Chapman tweeted, and
comes with a free T-shirt.
I'm concerned that woman is still in the bushes.
We had to check.
I've seen no evidence that she left, and I think someone should go to Jordan Hare and just see, are there bodies in the bushes? Someone should ask. It's a question that's important to ask.
I saw a guy. Okay, so you, Painter, you know the talking about a guy breaking his ankle. I can't believe this guy didn't break his ankle. I saw a guy, you know, where the band is, mm-hmm. and it's that cutout.
He jumped over that.
It's that cutout, right? And there's the steps down, mm-hmm. and there's that drop off in the corner where they built the. It's the same thing on the other side where they put the new facility in. So it's probably a good. I think from where he jumped, it was probably a good 7 foot drop.
It's probably higher than
seven
that.
Or eight. But from where this guy went up, it was probably about 7 or 8 foot drop. This dude just went boop right, just like right down.
And
like
you can see the stuff, man.
You could see the security guy just being like, "Don't." Okay, like it was like.
I did like the videos like where you like there's some videos of the students coming on the field and the security guys are like, "We're not. There's no point.
What can you do?" There's thousands of them and only a couple of dozen of you. What are you going to do? Have lightsabers?
I've rushed to court once at the University of Maryland my freshman year when they beat Duke. And that game, all the security guards stood arm in arm behind the student section like, we're not going to let you through. And then the first wave came in and started pushing. And the security guards were like, yeah, okay, we're going to stop.
Yeah, at $7, at $7 an hour, folks, that's not
there. You got to pay me a whole lot more than $7 an hour to be trampled? To get destroyed in the world's toughest game of Red Rover.
How many students are in the student section? Was it 20,000? Is that much? Yeah. So and 5,000 of them are sitting close enough to charge in the field immediately.
Nope.
Get out of the way.
Nope.
Let them go.
Nope.
Follow the Lunch Break on Twitter at Lunch Break ESPN. The Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7. To be a part of the show, call 321-1390 or toll free 888-382-7502.
Justin, it has been a lively show here with the Perfect Monday guest, Josh Vitale. Coach Gene Chizik joined us in hour one. If you missed any of the show, we have a podcast mm-hmm. just for you. Mm-hmm. Tell everybody how that's possible.
Yeah, you can go to ESPNAU.com and the ESPN 106.7 Podcast Center, SoundCloud, iTunes, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcast. That's brought to you by University Ace Hardware. Live University Ace Hardware, your helpful place, located next to the movie theater here in Auburn. Real quick, we'll get to this throughout the week.
The good thing about this game is that we're not going to have a shortage of...
Throughout the week, I want to talk about a couple of things. Should Auburn be ranked ahead of Alabama?
Yes.
We'll talk about that tomorrow. Other ones is, Painter, I want us to start a... we're going to do a search firm, me and you. We're going to have a search firm, and we are going to fill these college football vacancies at these schools elsewhere. Because I think what's about to happen at Ole Miss, Missouri, and Arkansas is going to be very interesting, especially Ole Miss and Missouri, because I don't think Matt Luke was a good coach. But I think I don't know in this spot where like Ole Miss can do better.
Yeah,
I want to see what they can do better.
Is that real, Logan? Like that's not a parody account.
That's what it says.
Let's check that out before because there's some just as we talk about this.
Oh my
there's
goodness!
There's some news on.
Yeah, that's real. Yo.
Yeah. So well, it looks like
hello.
Looks so like they've
so
got
they
their
had a,
replacement.
They had a plan.
Yeah. It looks
they
like
had
they had a
plan in mind.
All right. Well, what has happened here, folks? Since we're all
right.
We're all being cryptic about this Ole Miss job.
We're seeing that
here we go. Ole Miss has hired Mike Leach to be the next head coach of the Rebels.
Baby.
Yes.
I cannot wait until he starts talking.
I hope this is correct.
Oh man.
I don't know.
Auburn, Ole Miss, next October in Oxford, baby.
Woo! Come on. We have wanted this.
Wow. Okay, so all right, it makes sense
well,
that
makes
Ole Miss.
It a little bit easier.
All right, it makes sense that Ole Miss made that move
quickly,
very quickly, and very surprisingly. Missouri, what do you do? What do you do if you're Missouri?
Yeah, and it wasn't all like coming apart for Missouri. I mean, they had a lot of things working against them this year with some injuries. Defensively, they had some things going well under Odom, but I understand the desire to make a move, guys. I don't know.
No, it's
guys,
fake. It might be.
Dang it!
This is fake.
No. What? Logan?
I'm not the only one.
Logan?
Yeah, the link is to a message, to the 247 message board, but there's no post about it.
Oh. All right. False alarm, everybody. Our hopes were raised just like yours. We're sorry. We will follow this.
I'm trying to search Twitter to see if anyone else has put this up there, and it's just that one dude.
Does that seem like something, though, that like if you're Ole Miss... I don't know if you're likely to get back to where Hugh Freeze ever had you, so...
This dude's account is real.
Yeah, like, it's a...
All right, we're going to keep followers. We're going to keep work. It's a 24/7 sports guy.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to keep following that. Interesting timing that it happened right as we were discussing some of the upheaval in the SEC. Man, that would be quite a letdown.
I hope it's not fake.
If that is fake, I am going to be very disappointed.
So badly.
I think everyone's a little shook right now.
But, like, yeah, how did you get Rebels 24/7 to be your Twitter handle if you aren't real? Folks, I am upset.
All right.
Okay, so what is Ole Miss needs to hire Mike Leach, though, now.
Seems like the...
So I don't feel like an idiot.
The reception also positive in this room. Don't you think Ole Miss fans would be okay with it? Yay or nay? Yeah, how do we think they'll feel about that guy? As long as he wins 9 games a year, I don't think they'll care that much.
Yeah, no. I mean, I think they need to make a move. But they need to make a
Is there a clear option for Arkansas, Missouri, or Ole Miss? Like, is there just a guy that you think, look, he may not ever get us into the national title picture like Hugh Freeze, but at least we will be a relevant player in the SEC West once every few years and will be fun to watch? I mean, I don't know what the answer is for any of those programs. And for Arkansas, I think you're really concerned about just becoming an absolute bottom feeder permanently.
Right.
With Texas A&M doing what it's been able to do, LSU is in the same spot they've been, but...
A lot of people got on that one. Like, people who are Ole Miss fans. Like, people who are plugged in on the internet got.
So Bunky Perkins.
I don't feel as bad.
I was...
There are a lot of people who got on that
David
one.
David Johnson.
Because, hold on, time out. Time out. How am I supposed to know who covers Ole Miss for 24/7? I have no idea who that
is. I've looked at... So someone tweeted a screenshot of the real David Johnson, the fake David Johnson, and both their handles are at Rebels247. I don't know how that's possible.
They put a capital I instead of an L.
Oh, my God, that's what it'd be.
And is Rebels247 verified?
No.
Then how are we supposed to know?
Yeah. And the unverified fake account has 5,000 followers. That's usually a telltale sign. Like, if fake accounts usually have 5,000 followers.
Let's go to break. I'm upset.
This sucks.
Mike Leach, go to Oxford.
Like us on Facebook at ESPN 1067.
So there's a lot of disappointment. We are tucking tail here. We are sad. You, maybe many others of you who are on the Twitter.com was just fooled. Man, we were.
This is like a really good day so far, like a really fun show. Oh. And now I just feel like heartbroken.
I'm getting scolded right now. And I'm not enjoying it.
Hoops just scolding you.
I'm not going to reveal it, but...
deserve it or no?
I don't think. I mean, probably, but
let's all delete Twitter.
I think we got some. I think we got some glass houses being constructed right now.
Well, if you have not heard, Matt Luke is not being replaced by Mike Leach.
He could be though.
It's still on the table.
Let's put it out there.
It's not over.
The only thing that matters is that we bring Mike Leach to SEC Media Days and make that stupid week of nothing.
I'd be cool with him going to Arkansas, but I really want to see him with a bunch of...
I still think Arkansas is a great fit for Mike Leach, knowing very little about Arkansas or the politics there or anything, but just because Arkansas is not very good and Mike Leach does weird stuff and he always wins a good amount and then wears out his welcome, he's probably wearing out his welcome in Pullman, so send him to Arkansas. Give him a couple years.
I want to see that guy hanging out with a bunch of bros with Bama bangs and vest.
You do it.
And talking with him.
Mm-hmm.
What that conversation would look like, gracious. Well, sorry, folks. We can transition back to what was one of the crazier college football games, but we were really excited for a moment and had nothing to do with that incredible Iron Bowl. Let's go to Rob quickly. Rob is on the line. What's up, man?
Hey, you know, the Mike Leach, it would be fun, but the Ole Miss, I was talking to some Ole Miss people yesterday, and I said, you know, Ole Miss has got to do something. They got to quit showing highlights of Katy Perry in her damn pajamas out in the Grove 5 years ago at game day and thinking that's cool and start thinking about winning championships. I said they would be, a coach that, like Matt Luke would be would be, you know, cannibalized at a place like Auburn or Alabama. Not that he's a bad guy, but Ole Miss has got a their standard, you know, 7-5, 8-4, let's have a great party. I live in Memphis. I go to a lot of Ole Miss games. That's why they're in the position that they're in. And I understand that one man from Hattiesburg wrote that check. And that's crazy to get rid of everybody. But I think Mike McIntyre is the interim coach. But, you know, they're going to make a run on Mike Norvell up here in Memphis. Now you're about to see Fred Smith, the founder of FedEx, and Ted Hyde, the AutoZone founder, both big, huge Memphis supporters. You're going to see those guys probably be asked to step in to keep Mike Norvell there from him going to Ole Miss. And then what about Hugh Freeze to Arkansas? I've been hearing that that's a possibility, and also that they're talking to Lane Kiffin. But see, the politics in Arkansas is there's such a divide. You talked about an in-state rivalry. They've got it. It's the Little Rock people versus the Northwest Corner. That's where Gus was from, and Houston Nuts from Little Rock. And they're like a bunch of petty little teenage girls in the lunchroom gossiping about somebody's boyfriend or whatever. That's why they're in the position they're in.
Justin, Josh, your thoughts on Rob's points there about Arkansas, Ole Miss?
Yeah, Kiffin is interesting because, like, Kiffin had a bad year last year at Florida Atlantic. They're playing for the Conference USA title this weekend against UAB. So, like, this might be the time for him to jump again, but I want him back in the SEC. I want to see somebody have to deal with that. Right?
It'd be fun to see him not like trolling from a distance, but trolling from inside of the machine.
So, personality-wise, in my opinion, personality-wise, Leach to Arkansas, Kiffin to Ole Miss.
In terms of a
fun.
fit with what they need and what they I feel like that would be the better fit. But you know, I feel like there's going to be some interesting. It's going to be a lot of interesting moves there for sure.
Rob, we appreciate it. We've got to get into what's on the night as we wrap up today's show, and then we will finish out talking about. I mean, I don't think there's what's up. No?
You're good. Keep going. Okay. Keep going. Now, what were you about to say?
We were going to wrap up here the last...
No, you were about to say something. You were about to say something right there before I cut you off.
That we're going to wrap up talking about the Iron Bowl?
Yes. Okay.
Time now for What's On Tonight.
Oh. ESPN, 7:15 tonight, Monday Night Football. Viking Seahawks. Not a whole lot. There's a lot of stuff today, so we didn't get a ton of NFL talk. Quick takeaways from yesterday. The Tennessee Titans have built the best NFL offense of 1998.
Adam Gase should be fired from the Jets because Ryan Tannehill has been so good with the Titans.
I like that. Dolphins pulled off one of the coolest plays I've ever seen.
A punter to a kicker
for
a touchdown.
Eagles are bad.
Delete the entire Eagles franchise with the face. Drew Lock, 1-0 NFL starter. Also, the San Diego Chargers... No team in the history of football. No. The San Diego Chargers. No team in the history of football has been better at losing close games than the Phillip Rivers Chargers. No team.
Also, the Texans.
Putting it on the Patriots. The Patriots.
Also, I know he came back there in the fourth quarter with Tom Brady. Washed. He's done. Hang it up.
It's going to suck, though, when we have that conversation about him, him being washed for 2 weeks before the Super Bowl when he plays in it and wins it again.
And then rides off into the sunset in a Super Bowl where he completed 10 of 24 passes.
Tom Brady hates you and your entire family. Yeah, just know that.
Until they're not in the AFC Championship game, I will just hold my thoughts on Brady's decline.
But here's the thing, though. I think the Ravens are going to get everybody.
Yeah. No, and know what I want.
That was a fun finish yesterday.
This is a realistic possibility. The Buffalo Bills stealing the AFC West title.
East.
Whatever.
We'll take it.
That's how geography works. real quick though, the Ravens, if you had to put your life and death on a sports thing happening, would it be a Justin Tucker field goal?
Yeah, he's so good. He's so good.
That or I guess like a...
I like free throws to him.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say either that or does Shaquille O'Neal, can he get you 2 points in the year 2000? Like, can he just find 2 points?
Vikings Seahawks tonight, ESPN 7:15. Russell Wilson gets to play on national television. It's going to be a lot of fun. And the Vikings are a good football team.
Is that game
team.
In Minnesota?
That is in Seattle.
Okay, that makes it less interesting because I feel like Minnesota's not going to win there.
Who knows? The Vikings, I mean, the Seahawks defense is so sporadic that you're like, yeah. Maybe.
And the Vikings offense is so sporadic. Like, they're like, this team could be anyone or this team could lose to anyone. I don't really know which is the answer.
NBA TV doubleheader tonight. Jazz, Sixers at 6. 9 o'clock gets Bulls and Kings.
Yeah.
Kings not as fun without De'Aaron Fox right now.
Or and Bagley.
And Bagley.
And Bulls are not as fun just because they're the Bulls and they're not very fun.
Kobe White's been...
He's had some good games. Yeah. Laurie Markkanen kind of is bad this year, so...
LaVine will have a game where he'll put up 40, and then the next night he'll put up 4.
Yeah, so... Yeah.
College basketball at ESPN2 got a doubleheader number at 6, Miami-Illinois. Speaking of Illinois, Northwestern put it on him and then fired their offensive coordinator in football this weekend.
Yeah, buddy.
8 o'clock, Clemson and Minnesota. Richard Pitino, hello. This is interesting. So, Auburn moving up to 14.
14 in the AP. In AP poll in basketball. Coaches.
They play Furman this week. A very much like pretty much every team they played this year, with the exception of Cal State Northridge and I guess Colgate fits it as well.
Yeah.
Spunky.
Yes.
a team that you just don't want to play in the NCAA tournament.
Also, Auburn went from playing 7 games in about 2.5 weeks to playing. They played Thursday. They haven't played since Tuesday. They play Thursday. They don't play again until the following Saturday in Birmingham. So a nice little rest practice stretch for this Auburn team.
It's a good setup, right? Like you played a bunch of experienced teams with your young team, now you've got a break.
Tonight's Christmas special, CBS at 7, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
All-time classic.
See, I don't like the stop-motion stuff because it's creepy to me. That animation's kind of odd.
I'm with Josh here. I love it.
This one is the GOAT.
Charlie Brown Christmas is the animated.
Rudolph is the GOAT to me.
I haven't watched Christmas Vacation yet. I will probably watch it at least 3 times before the holiday season is over. That is my all-time favorite.
Okay, for what it's worth, thank you, Dave McKinney, friend of the program, sends a press release that Peterson to step down from the Huskies, Lake name new Huskies coach, and he says this one is real. This looks like an actual press release from, yes, the Washington Football Verified Twitter account.
Okay, that seems more realistic.
All right. Kind of surprised.
Weird.
Yeah, seems like things were. I know that this season,
not a great season
was an outlier for them, but
Chris Peterson's a good coach.
Yeah, I would think that the university would not go in a different direction with him. That just at least without knowing basically anything, that he decided to leave. Can you guys envision a world where they just decided to go in a different direction? I would not think so.
As Peterson will transition to a leadership advisory role for Husky Athletics.
All right, interesting.
That's very interesting.
Not what I expected, but
Steps down with a career record of 146-38. The man can coach.
Yeah. I gotta wonder what's going on. He always seemed to me like kind of that odd bird where like he would just step down, like he wasn't going to be a lifer.
Yeah.
So I mean, Jimmy Lake's real good. And I think Washington's going
to
be good
for a while. Yeah, maybe he's just tired.
They made a lot of efforts to make sure he doesn't go anywhere.
That was
else.
Not a good this year was not a good season for Washington. And Maybe they need to step in a different direction. That's man, Chris Peterson though, like he's going to go down as one of the best coaches of his era that we didn't necessarily.
Yeah, I think the press release said he's like the second winningest, or like second best winning percentage of an active FBS coaches. I can't talk.
Brian Saban.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, that's the thing. At Boise State, like, they just didn't lose.
No, they didn't.
It was like one game a year.
And Washington, he hasn't been great, but he's been pretty good his whole tenure there.
Right.
Interesting news.
Very interesting for sure. Very, very interesting for sure. The Dan Peck Memorial HBO pick of the evening.
R.I.P. Dan.
HBO Signature at 6, The Favorite. I'm not going to tell you anything that happens in this movie. You got to experience it for yourself.
Pass. I don't know what that is. Pass.
It was Emma Stone, Rachel Weisz, Olivia Colman.
I've heard of one of those people.
Good. it's a historical piece, kind of.
Oh, I did see a commercial for that.
Yeah.
Okay.
I could get into it, but not on air, probably. Mm. You have to get into it yourself. Anyway, that is what's on tonight. No House Hunters International tonight. They're still trying to convince us that Flipper Flop's a good show by putting it on for 10 solid hours.
No, guys.
Garbage. I don't care about American houses. I don't care about people rebuilding American houses. Make me watch two dim-witted Americans try to buy an apartment in a foreign country. That's what I want to see.
I enjoyed hanging with Coach Chizik today.
Yeah.
His insight always appreciated. You can catch him. They're doing a big film analysis this week at SEC Network and SEC Now. So check him out there. And that's going to about do it for us. Josh, what's going on? I think this has been a good week. I know you don't like this word. Neither you nor Justin seem to care for it. But it's been a good week for content.
Content.
There it is.
Gross word.
That word.
Yeah. The Montgomery Advertiser will have it. I'm going to write about stuff. You can go read it there if you'd like. If you don't want to, that's also fine. It's really up to you, honestly. So
we did not hear from Shadow.
Darn.
Interesting there.
He's still working on the deep state theory, and it's going to take some reworking after the Iron Bowl.
You think
Bowl
he's upset?
Win, so.
I do wonder. There are
people upset.
Yeah, I do think that there are Auburn fans that were rooting for a loss in some way.
Because they thought it might fire up the conversation to get Gus gone.
Gus Malzahn, the only coach with 3 wins against Saban right now.
Well, less, kind of.
The only coach that matters.
Yeah.
The only coach that's not getting his eyes beat out by Baylor.
Kansas is not canon. So.
You remember there was like, they had that one game where it was like, aha, Kansas! And it's like, nah, you're still Kansas.
Yeah. And they're still better this year than they have been, like, in the last 10 years combined.
Texas is not back.
Give me Texas and, Is there another team that was just way below expectations this year? Texas was the ultimate one.
Miami was pretty far below expectations.
Give me a Texas-Miami bowl game.
Miami bowl eligible? Who knows?
All right, that'll do it.
Josh, thank you.
Thank you.
Yes.
Follow me on Twitter at JFerguson. You can read my stuff at The Athletic. You can read my novel from the Iron Bowl. You can read my film room from it as well. Up today, tomorrow, story on Bo Nix and why Auburn might be a little bit better than we thought they were going to be for the future after what we saw on Saturday.
The Drive with Bill Cameron today from 4 till 6. Stephen A. Smith coming up next. Have a great start to the week. And until tomorrow at 11, keep it toasty.